It's 88.5 KCSN Sky Daniels. A real pleasure to have Bob Mould join us on KCSN. Welcome, Bob.
Sky, thank you for having me. This is great.
It, you know, I have to ask, the cover art of Beauty and Ruin, which comes out today.
Yeah.
Yay.
Hey.
It tells a story in itself. You know, it reflects, at least in my viewing, you know, your awareness of a long journey that you've taken. Was that intentional?
Well, I knew it when I saw it. The quick version, I had been working on a lot of different, you know, graphics for the covers, and then I saw this digital painting by a Japanese artist, and it was of like a teenager that looked like they'd been sort of beaten or had been in a fight or something, and it was very beautiful. I reached out. The artist never got back to me. So I said, I wonder if I could do something like that with pictures of myself. So I, you know, had Photoshop open and grabbed an old photo and a recent photo and dumped them in, and they landed on top of each other. And I was like, oh, that is scary. So I sort of kept that idea and then worked with the you know, the in-house art people at Merge Records. And we just moved the two images a little more side by side. And then it was like, yeah, that's exactly it.
Well, the younger picture seems to be one very pensive and in thought, and while the more recent image is staring you right in the face and saying, "Yeah, I've seen this road."
And which is which? You know, the chain smoking 19-year-old or the, you know, the 53-year-old? Which is the beauty? You know, it's beauty.
It's in the eye of the beholder.
It's the great thing about words. You know, when you put them side by side like that, they're so opposite. They're so exactly alike.
We were talking off mic. You know, I alluded to a question that I've hoped would make sense to you. You know, growing up in the Midwest myself, as I did and as you did, when you launched Husker Du, there wasn't a context. You know, you couldn't be sure of, there wasn't an alternative format. There wasn't the trees hadn't been cut in the forest yet.
No.
And the band launched with such a ferocity. It seemed to me as if you were sticking your chin out and going, oh yeah, well, we're coming.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, Husker Du was my first band. Our first show was in the spring of 79. We were based in the Twin Cities. And, I mean, there was a really great punk rock scene back then. There was a club called The Longhorn where everybody from The Police to Blondie, you know, all the new wave bands would play there. And there was also great local bands like NNB, The Suburbs, and especially a band called The Suicide Commandos.
Right.
And they were a three-piece sort of pop punk guitar bass drums, and I had purchased their record in Burlington, Vermont, which was close to where I grew up, and I loved the record. And then when I went to school, the first weekend I got to the Twin Cities, 17 years old, I get a fake ID, go to the punk rock club to see the Suicide Commandos. And it was just, you know, there were people there, but I think with Husker Du, you know, once we found our sound, yeah, we definitely stuck our chin and then some out at sort of, you know, mainstream music. You know,
right, the mainstream media.
Yeah, 80s, you know, hardcore punk, you know, it was very, very off the beaten path. You know, we're renting VFW halls, you know, we're renting PAs from churches for $20, and you put up flyers and 100 people show up and somehow you make $75 and it's enough to get from LA to Phoenix, where hopefully the same thing will happen when you get there. And we did years of that, and there were hundreds of bands, great bands, whether, you know, Black Flag, Dead Kennedys, DOA, Wipers, Naked Ray Gun, Minor Threat. I mean, so many
practically
bands
the entire SST label.
Yeah, SST,
Puppets,
Alternative Tentacles. I mean, there was great, Meat Puppets. I mean, there were so many great bands, and we weren't sure what we were doing, but we were doing something, and just trying to create this new way for people to hear music. You know, fanzines like Maximum Rock and Roll,
right.
Flipside. Just, you know, sharing a lot of information and not on the internet because there was no internet. There was...
Now, that's got to be for you even as you say it. I know you in your book, you reflected a lot on this. I'm going to imagine, we've now seen what the internet hath wrought. There's a lot, and perhaps
everything you want and more.
Too much, you yes. know. But wouldn't it have seemed that that kind of communication vehicle would have helped engage a much broader audience a lot faster than what you had to do, which is literally town to town, little tribe by tribe.
We were the witnesses, you know. It's we press up these singles and you take them, you find you roll into a town, you somehow decipher where the indie record store is, and you go and you try to sell a box of singles for a buck a piece so that you can get gas money. I think the difference between then and now, I mean, now information is free, it's available, everybody can put out their own records, and you will find those handful of people who like your work. But the difference was going door to door. You know, it's like we were like salesmen, we were like preachers, we were like in the carnival. You know, you just go and you have this thing and it's your calling card and you try to meet people and you're like, oh, I saw some punk rock graffiti on that building. Slow down. Maybe there's some punks over there.
And all these songs I read for you, it turned me up, it's not hard to do. Listen to my voice, it's the only weapon I kept from the war. From the war. From the war. From the war. And I can soothe every ailment you endure. And I can see into the future most assured. I don't have a choice, it's the only life I know after the war. After the war. Up from the war. Up from the war. And everything we made reduced to dust. You are the one who taught me most. Carry your remains, your emblem and your name. Nothing left will ever be the same. This war we fought was violent and long. Weeks turned into years, but we kept on keeping on. Ringing in my brain, it's what remains. What remains. It's what remains. Has worn me down. Broken dreams and a hole in the ground. Don't give up and don't give in.
The new album, Beauty and Ruin, I'm going to assume that the narrative is partially driven because I understand that your father passed away.
Yeah.
In interviews I've read, you were, as anyone would be, you had to stop and take a look at the true big picture.
Well, yeah, my dad passed away in October of 2012, and, you know, Silver Age had been out for a month. We had just finished touring, and, you know, I remember actually going from a festival in Pensacola straight to the hospital up near Jacksonville where he was to spend as much time as I could at the end with him. And he passed a few weeks later, and that was, I guess that's the benchmark or the beginning point for the writing of Beauty and Ruin, you know, and that obviously the, you know, to me, the narrative of the record, it breaks down into four themes, you know, begins with, you know, that sense of loss, you know, and the second theme is, you know, sort of reflection, thinking about that, you know, the life lost, times lost, you know, your own loss coming at some point. And then, you know, and then the record moves on to acceptance of what's happened, and ultimately the record ends up, you know, bright with the future because time is short and, you know, gotta fix it. Yeah, you gotta get things
fix
done.
Fix It kind of says, well, let's get going.
Yeah, and Fix It, for example, is a great, you know, great song for me on the record. A lot of the second half of the record, I left a lot, you know, left lyrics open-ended. And it was literally the last day of recording, last day of mixing, that I had to come up with words for that song, and it was fun because I didn't think it was going to be the album closer, and then it ended up being the album closer. But I didn't have any words, so I just went back and grabbed ideas from the entire record, and sort of created this epilogue, you know. So I guess it started with my dad's passing, and you know, 12 months of writing. And for people who haven't read my autobiography, See a Little Light, I talk about my dad as the one who brought music to me as a kid. We had a family grocery store, and he used to buy used jukebox singles from the vending company. And those were my toys when I was a kid, and I still have them. You know, they've followed me all around.
It's got to be a blessing.
Yeah, so it's, it all felt right. You know, there was parts of me that wondered, you know, do you really want to get into this in discussion? But, you know, maybe that's one of the beauties of staying at this so long, is that when you do have the, you know, these unfortunate things that happen to all of us, that, you know, I get to maybe try to figure out my story and show it to people. And people seem to be responding well to the narrative.
As soon as you say to me, you know, an heirloom, if you will, from your father was, he was giving you these 45s. I mean, you know, for people of our generation, I'm like, oh man, what a cool dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I all of a sudden went to, okay, which labels, the orange and yellow Capitol label and the purple Motown label.
Yeah, this world, the blue Motown with the Detroit map, or roulette with the wheel with the little O as the ball. And,
right. I sit there and think of what a prized possession that would be to have, because obviously there's that physical remnant, but there's the memories of the mm-hmm. songs and what they meant to you and him and everything. It has to be a great treasure.
Yeah, and of course, and something that I wouldn't have felt comfortable telling people before. But I mean, when you know, with the writing of this record, when I get stuck, like, how do I get out of this song? How do I get out of I Don't Know You Anymore? How many choruses at the end? How do I build it up? Oh, I'm going to go over to that stack of singles, and I'm going to put some of these that have nice long outs on them. I'm going to see what everybody did.
The answer is there.
The answer's right there. You know, it's great. It's so, you know, beautiful. I cheat. You know, we all cheat.
All right, this one's called The Descent. Started out so starry-eyed, full of hope and wonder. All the flowers in my hair, not aware I'd been defiled. Whoa! Every time I see you, I know it's going down. I cannot believe you. Karma comes around. I know this ride, you must be there by my side. You go in town, I must be descending. Whoa. 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 Didn't the song that gave people so much hope. Why? Turn my back, I turned away. Here's the rope that made me choke. Every time I see you, I know it's going down. How can I believe you? Karma comes around. You can see it in my eyes. You can read it on my face. You can hear it as I cry. God, I hope it's not too late. Can I try make it up to you somehow now? Can I try make it up to you? You can read it on my face. You can hear it as I cry. God, I hope it's not too late. Can I try make it up to you somehow now? Can I try make it up to you somehow? Now my race is finally run as I tumble to the sun. All these things I can't achieve brought me crashing to my knees. My descent has now begun. All the music left undone. Yeah. The world, it is descending now. Can I try? The world, it is descending now. The world, it is descending now. Yeah. The world, it is descending. The world, it is descending.
It speaks to, again, somehow, you know, we're going to conveniently loop back to what I believe, you know, the narrative of the album was, is that you have embraced that long arc. Mm-hmm. And you're, and I don't say this to be patronizing, but, you know, the new album, when I got it, I was like, man, he's on fire. The album is vital. And I think you've come to grips, I assume to some degree, you've come to grips with the iconic status that is afforded you, you know, being a punk rock icon. And then the... Later, you reinvent yourself with Sugar, and, mm-hmm. and you create a new identity, per se. And now, you make a record that shows every bit of passion and energy that you had. And it's part about survival, mm-hmm. and it's part about right now, who am I? When you were making the record, sometimes the artist at a certain point, you know, I had David Gray in here a couple of weeks ago, and David Gray said he sought out his producer on this album to simply not make the record he'd made before. Mm-hmm. That he knew himself that he had his own, quote, shtick, and mm-hmm. that he wanted to, you know, everyone talks about growth, but he wanted to make a record that really, that he could find growth. Mm-hmm. When you make an album like Beauty and Ruin, based on, you know, what inspired its beginnings, when you get to that part of who am I now as a musician, do you get stuck, as you were saying, or do you have a clearer vision of what you want to say now?
Yeah, I mean, the process is still sort of mysterious. You know, I mean, I often describe it as you just need to be ready to catch the inspiration and make something out of it. Like, you know, sitting down and writing a song is one thing, but when the moment hits you, you have to be receptive to it and be able to get it as quickly as you can. As far as legacy and stuff, I, you know, I'm comfortable with it. I, you know, after Husker Du, to make a record like Workbook that was, you know, so autumnal and acoustic based, and
you just celebrated the 25th, and
just
and
did 25 of that,
revisited that,
have that to Sugar, to you know making, you know, albums at home, lo-fi albums at home, to making electronic records, and you know, over the past 10 years slowly coming back to Silver Age and now Beauty and Ruin. You know, a lot of things have happened in the last 3 years to show that have showed me who I am and what I've done, and you know, that there's still room for me to do stuff. You know, whether it was the Disney Hall tribute, you know, with people like Dave Grohl and Ryan Adams. And
who, by the way, Dave was going to come by with Butch, but they're up, they got stuck up in Seattle.
And they were planning on being here.
Because they're right down the street.
That would have been a wonderful surprise. I love seeing those guys. But, you know, at Disney Hall, to have friends like that, you know, Craig and Tad from Hold Steady and Britt from Spoon and Margaret Cho and No Age, to have people singing it back at me, it makes me realize, I guess, what I've been doing. And
I love that.
When I'm working on a song,
the way you just put that. I realize what I've been doing.
Because when you're in it, you know, you always want to be a pioneer and move forward. But then you get that moment where your words come back at you, and then you go, "Oh, okay." And it's nice. And now I don't worry about, you know, a riff sounding like something I may have written before. If it feels right going by, that's the one I'm going to use. And I attribute a lot of that comfort not only to people like Dave and Ryan, but especially, I think, to Jason Narduzzi and John Worster, my bass player and drummer. We've been playing together.
That's a solid band now. Six, 7 years?
6 years now. And, you know, I know what our strong suit is. We've been playing, you know, deep catalog cuts for years, and I know how we sound good, and it's the way this record sounds. And I'm good with that. Those guys enjoy it. When I bring them a song and we play it and they light up, it's like, yep, let's do this one. And it's funny with this record, we pretty much learned the stuff in the studio as we were recording, and I don't think we went more than 10 times on any song. So, I mean, it's got a very immediate feel to
it. Well, because you're locked in it.
Yeah, three of us had just gotten back from South American tour. We had 2 days at home, and then three of us in a room at Steve Albini's place in Electrical Audio in Chicago. And yeah, we're just sort of looking at each other, learning these songs. It's a good way to do it.
But the process now, you do have the intuition amongst the three of you where you can feel like, okay. And I think then becomes the cerebral aspects of everything you're saying of like, okay, we could lock into this, but what can we do to maybe try something that's not in our comfort zone?
Yeah, a song like Low Season that opens Beauty and Ruin. That one, you know, I remember John thinking, I haven't played a song like, you know, this sort of the dirge down like this. And I was like, well, he got it right away. It was great. Felt really, really good. I was like, just follow the words. We'll get it. And Let the Beauty Be, what was, you know, originally the closer, but now the second to last album. Now the second to last song on Beauty and Ruin. It was a very sparse acoustic song. I, you know, recorded that at home and had those guys play along in the studio to what I had done. And yeah, that sounds
like your typical coda. Right?
Yeah. And then fix it, of course.
And then you throw in the epilogue because, of course, with you, it's never, ever finished.
Never finished, nope.
You know, and it's going to finish with a bang.
It's never done.
It's going to finish with a bang. It's not going to go out with a whimper, but a bang.
1, 2, 3, 4. Tears filled up my eyes, watched to play with sorrow, girl. Somewhere in my mind, no, there's no tomorrow. You see, you're living soon, guess you've had your fill. If I can't change your mind, then no one will. I know. If I can't change your mind, now I know. And all throughout the years, I never strayed from you, my dear. No, you suspect I'm somewhere else, feeling sorry for yourself, leaving with a broken heart. I love you even still. If I can't change your mind, then no one will. I know, I know. If I could change your mind now, I know, I know. Even though my heart keeps breaking, don't you know that I'll be waiting here for you? Then when you return, yeah, when will you return now? Hope you see I'm dedicated. Look how long that I have waited. If you come back, you will find a different person if you change your mind. How can I explain away something that I haven't done? No, you can't trust me now. Never trust in anyone. All the crazy doubts you've got, I love you even still. If I can't change your mind, then no one will. I know, I know. If I can't change your mind now, I know, I know. Said, oh yeah, someday you'll see I've been true. Stay that way until now. If I can't change your mind, then no one will. I know, I know, I know. If I can't change your mind now, I know, no, I know. If I can't change your mind now, I know, I know, I know. If I can't change your mind now, I know, I know, yeah, yeah. If I can't change it, do 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 do.
The album, you know, I'm in this weird position as a guy who's been doing this a while, and many of us here at the radio station, you know, we have a lot of veterans. You know, we embrace our heroes, and we're a different kind of station in which we really love to embrace and sustain the legacies of performers like yourself. But we also then run that risk of, you know, are we doing this out of blind allegiance, or is the record really vital? And this record, you know, I hope you take it in the way I mean it. It kicked my ass on first listen. I went, you know, and the everyone at the station got to go, damn, this is good. This is good, right? This is really good. And it's nice. It's a wonderful experience because, look, I can relate to, okay, today you make something vital. Make mm-hmm. something more vital than before. Yeah. And you've done it. I mean, I certainly encourage the listeners out there to, you know, with the record being in store, you're going to celebrate the release today.
Yeah,
just 6 o'clock.
In a little bit,
you're
going to
go to
Amoeba,
right?
Yep.
Now, according to your manager, and I trust your manager, as far as I can throw him, he tells
he
me this
hear
might
us.
Be your first, oh yeah, he can. he says this might be your first in-store in a long time.
Long time with a band playing in a store. That it's been forever. I think I played at the Rough Trade Shop in East London a handful of years ago, just a few songs on guitar. But yeah, everybody's going to be, you know, John and Jason, yeah, full boat, bring your earplugs.
Well, listen, at Amoeba, the opportunity to see you guys lock in behind this new record, I mean, I don't have to sell this to our listeners. Anyone who knows it's good. It's going to be an experience, and the fact that you came out here today to talk to us and to let us share, you know, the news about the release of the record and to get some insight personally and to share, you know, our passion, it means a hell of a lot to us. And I'll be on the air when you're plugging in. So just if it passes your mind, think of me, because I'll be proselytizing
right.
on your behalf.
Right.
I'll be at my pulpit and you'll be at yours.
Yay. That's what it's all about, right?
Well, it's truly been wonderful, and let's don't make it the last time you come by. Let's make many more trips to come from the great Bob Mould here on 88.5 KCSN. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Sky.
You got it.